Okay, so we're holding at the top. We're holding at the top of Samach Kesem et Aleph, second line. To recap, especially since the end of the day of Samach Ches, we kind of rushed through a bit. We had the Gemara said we're going to have four questions that Rami Bar Chama is asking. The first couple of them have to do with the Shtei Lachem, which is why we're bringing them in over here. And then while we're at it, we have a couple of other questions that he asked about the status of things changing at, depending on what's done with them.
Right.
So we had the first one was he asked. We know from the Mishnah, we said that grain becomes mutter, grain from this year's crop, the Chodesh, becomes mutter to eat, for, becomes mutter for regular people to eat once the Omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan. And then it becomes mutter to use for menachos once the Shteya Lechem are brought later that year on Shavuot. But the Evid, we said if they're brought before Shavuot, they're also kosher, but whatever. So his question was, suppose you have grain that was planted after the Omer, before the Shteya Lechem. So instead of the normal growth cycle would be, it's planted, then comes the Omer, then comes the Shteya Lechem, and sometime, if that, sometime during that period, it's harvested before the Omer, after the Omer, whatever. Here, what you have is it was planted after the Omer, and so then the first thing that happens while it's growing is the Shteya Lechem, and then the following year you have the Omer on the following year to Zayin. So does that make it mutter? So does that make it mutter to bring for a mincha at that
point?
The following year after Shavuot of the following year. So we tried to bring a proof.
It's stored between
No, it was planted after the Omer, before the Shteya Lechem. It's growing or taking root or whatever before the Shteya Lechem. Then you have the following year comes the Omer. So it's harvested sometime before the Omer, let's assume, because I mean there's 10 months between the Shteya Lechem and the following year's Omer. Wheat doesn't take that long to grow. So whatever it is, harvested sometime that winter, let's say. Comes the Omer the following year, it becomes mutter to eat. Does it also, at the same time, make it mutter from the Nachas, since, after all, the Shteya Lechem already passed while it was growing also, or do we say that no, the Shteya Lechem that make it mutter from the Nachas have to be the ones that come after the Omer. So therefore, we'd have to wait until the Shteya Lechem of the following year. So that was Rami Bar Chama's question. And so we tried to bring a proof from a Braisa where we had Rabbi Akiva pointing out that the Shteya Lechem are supposed to be, that one, we have a proof that the Omer is barley as opposed to most other menachos, which are wheat, because otherwise the Shteya Lechem is not going to be the first crop of the year. The whole point is the Shteya Lechem are called Bikurim. So if you're going to say that which is in fact the case, that the Omer is barley and the Shteya Lechem is wheat, well then good. Then in that case, the Shteya Lechem is the first wheat that's brought as menachos that year. But if
you still agree, how can a
nomer
one year?
No, one second. What Rabbi Akiva is saying is this. Forget about Rabbi Bar Chama's question for a second. In a normal situation, we were saying that you can't bring menachos from the new grain crop until after the Shteya Lechem. So what it means is the Shteya Lechem is the first wheat that is being used for menachos that year. The first wheat from that year's crop.
Right.
So now, going back to Rabbi Bar Chama's question, on the face of it, therefore we have a proof. Mm-hmm. Obviously then the answer must be that you can't use this wheat that was planted before the Shteya Lechem until the following year's Shteya Lechem, because otherwise you're not going to have the following year. The Shteya Lechem isn't going to be the first wheat that's brought as Omer, that's brought as a mincha. However, we said that's not really a proof, because what Rabbi Akiva may mean is that you don't want to have that the Shteya Lechem that are brought on Shavuot should be the first crop of that year. So now in this case you have it. There was an Omer that year, and therefore the Shteya Lechem is fine. The Shteya Lechem is being brought as usual. Doesn't mean that in this case, given that it was already planted before last year's Shteya Lechem, maybe we still could bring it before this year's Shteya Lechem and it wouldn't violate Rabbi Akiva's rule.
In an easier way of wording it, you said the Shteya Lechem has to come from the crop of the other and not from another one.
Well, they're not from the same crop, because one's wheat and one's barley. But right, the point is, in other words, that you thought when you brought this proof, you thought that it meant that the Shteya Lechem necessarily have to be the first wheat that's brought that year. Not necessarily. It just has to be the first new wheat of that year, and this isn't new anymore because it was a Shteya Lechem last year. So therefore, so there's no proof one way or the other, and therefore we're left with Rami Bachama's question. Can you bring them before the Shtei Halachim or not? And the answer is you shouldn't, but if you did, then b'di'evit it's acceptable, says Rambam. That was the first question, because we have a topic, and as usual, when we have a topic, it's karbonis, you shouldn't do it, but if it hits your horse.
The Shtei Halachim, which are weak, has to come from the same crop, the same period of crop as the owner.
Well, yeah, but that's what no, there's no question the Shtei Halachim has to be from this year's crop. The question is, can we use this wheat, this other wheat that was planted last year before Shavuot, not can we use it for the Shtei Halachim, can we use it for other menachos between Pesach and Shavuot? And the answer is, ultimately, we can't be sure. Maybe yes, maybe not.
Between Pesach
and Shavuot. If it had been planted this year, then we're saying, well, clearly you shouldn't.
All the menachos that are given during a year has to come from the crop of the Shavuot.
No, absolutely not. No, most menachos you can bring from new wheat, you can bring from old wheat. It doesn't matter. They can be from you can bring menachos from grain that was grown 5 years ago, as long as it's still intact. Well, then fine. Only it's because only the Omer and the Shtei Halachim have the rule that it has to be from this year's crop. Okay, so that was Rami Bachama's first.
Sure?
Yeah, positive. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta. I think we're going to learn something about that. Okay, so that's how it is.
So
the conclusion is, therefore, we don't have a conclusion, so therefore, Rami Bachama's question is left as a thought. Okay. Next. Boy Rami Bachama, second question of Rami Bachama, second line of Samach Tet Amar. Shtei Halachim, when it comes now to the Shtei Halachim, Hanotah Shaya or Hanotah Shaya? What is it that makes it mutter? Hanotah or Hanotah? Hanotah means the beginning of the blossoming. Chanasa is a later stage of the growth. You have a couple of different explanations among the Rishonim what exactly they are. For example, one explanation is that Chanasa means when the flowers start growing. Another one is that it means when the immature fruit starts developing. Whatever it is, Chanasa is an earlier stage. Chanasa is a later stage. The question is, Shtei Halachim, Chanasa Shaya, is it? Is it that anything that blossomed, that had Hanotah before the Shtei Halachim becomes Mutter, or is it anything that had Hanotah before then, which is a later stage of the development? So now, one way of explaining the Gemara's question is that we're not talking about grain at all. We're talking about, like this we say, we said that the Shtei Halachim are Bikurim. We also said, therefore, that as far as Bikurim, that the individual brings from their crops, you don't bring them until after Shavuot. So then the question would be, what stage does the fruit have to have reached before the Shtei Halachim? In order that the Shtei Halachim being brought on Shavuot is now matter them to be brought as Bikurim this year. That's one way of explaining it. A different way that some other Rishonim, including the Rambam, understand it is we are actually talking about grain. We're talking about this that we're saying the Shtei Halachim is matter grain to be brought to be brought for a mincha. Does it depend on Hanasa or does it depend on Hanasa? What has to have happened before the Shtei Halachim? What's the stage it has to have reached? Which in that case, in that case, it's a little difficult to understand because you have already the previous question, if they were planted before Shavuot and now it's after the Omer. But okay, because the point is, if it was planted before the Omer, it will surely have reached long past Hanasa and long past Hanasa by the time you get to Shavuot. So presumably we have to be talking about it's growing, it's not decaying. We're talking about
for a year.
No, that's not the point. From the Omer to the Shtei Halachim is only 7 weeks. That's the point. The point is, if we understand that the question is as far as grain, when it becomes mutter for menachos, then that implies we have to be talking about where it was planted between Pesach and Shavuot. If it was planted before Pesach, of course, it long since reached Hanotah or Hanotah by the time of the Shtei Halachim. And in that case, then what are we asking? We already had the previous question. Okay, anyway, but that's it. Okay. However, well, as long as it took root before Pesach. Well, no, as long as it took root. We're going to talk about that in a couple of blocks. Wait. Okay. So the question is, my Hanotah. First of all, we have to ask, what part of the plant are we talking about reached Hanotah or Hanotah anyway? Are you talking about, as Yomi Bahama asking the question, if the fruit reached the stage of Hanasa or Hanasa, as the case may be? Again, the fruit, if we're talking about, as opposed to what we're going to see, something else. But if we mean the fruit, or according to the Rambam, meaning the grain, the actual grain kernels, well, then what's the question? Hashka hashrosh ha-shalya, we know it becomes mutter as far as the Omer and the Shkei Lechem, as long as it took root before them, as long as grain took root before the Omer, then it becomes mutter later. So obviously, Hanasa v'chanasa nebaya, obviously, Hanasa v'chanasa, do you need to ask? Obviously, those are later stages in development beyond even taking root. Ela hanasa de'ola v'chanasa de'ola. So no, we have to say, Rami Bahama's question is, if you have the leaves of the plant, the leaves of the tree, or according to the Rambam, the leaves on the stalk of the grain, if they had their hanasa or chanasa.
Why do you need the leaves?
Because the plant has leaves. And the fact is, the plant grows through its leaves. The leaves are where photosynthesis takes place. So without leaves, you don't have a... No, the point is, in other words, if you don't have leaves, you don't have a plant. As a matter of fact, by the way, we're going to get to in Kolin in a couple of months, Bez Hashem, we're going to get to a metaphor that the Gemara mentions of it, as the Jewish people are like a grapevine. The Amei Aretz are like the leaves, meaning you can't eat them, but on the other hand, they're essential to the growth of the vine, and they protect the grapes. In the same way, the Amei Aretz are also needed for the Jewish people, because after all, they grow the crops, they do the things. You know, you have these days in Tanya, where the Alter Rebbe is talking about the idea from the Zohar that nowadays the Talmud Chachamim to a certain extent have to depend on the Amei Aretz, whereas Limos HaMashiach, it won't be like that. So yes, so the leaves are an essential part of the plant.
They'll be redundant.
They'll also go up a level. They won't be Amei Aretz anymore, at least not on the low level that they are now.
The
expression of the Pasuk, the nations of the world will realize the greatness of the Jewish people and the importance of learning Torah, and they'll do the work for us so that we'll be free to learn Torah and come closer to Hashem. Anyway, the point is that leaves are an essential part of the plant, so that's why the Gemara is asking. So therefore, that can be the question. If you have the leaves reach the stage of Hanasa or the stage of Hanasa, the question is, mihavi ki hashrasha, is that the equivalent of taking root? Again, according to Rashi, it's more straightforward to understand the question. According to Rashi, the question here isn't regarding grain, it's regarding fruit that you're going to bring for Bikurim. So the question is, with fruit, you know, when you plant trees, you anyway can't eat the produce of them the first 3 years of Zara. But obviously, therefore, with them, taking root isn't the issue. The question is, at what point of its growth cycle do we consider that it now becomes mutter as a result of the Shkei Lechem being brought, that now it can be brought for Bikurim? So if you have, the fruit itself hasn't started developing before Shavuos, only the leaves have started developing, so that's Rami Bahama's question. Mihavi ki ashrasha, is that the equivalent of taking root when it comes to grain? Oloy, or maybe not. And again, the answer is teiku, we don't know, and therefore it's a suffix. So according to Rashi, therefore, it would be a suffix whether you could bring the fruit as Bikurim. According to the Rambam, who understands that we're talking about grain, the question is, it would be a suffix whether you could bring this grain for Menachos. And again, you shouldn't, but if you did, b'dieved, then it's okay.
Is he answering the question as a cause of, or as a siman of the growth?
No, he's asking, this we're going to learn later on, we're going to learn that as long as grain takes root before the Omer is brought, the siman is that it took root. So we consider, as long as it's planted a certain amount of time before Pesach and before the Omer is brought, then it's assumed to have taken root. Right. So you have different opinions over there, 3 days, 14 days, whatever. The point is, so the Rami Bahama's question is, when it comes to fruit of trees, or at least the point of Rashi that we're talking about fruit, do we say that the development of the leaves is parallel, in that case, to the development of root in grain, and therefore, in other words, that the Shtei Lechem now will make it mutter to be brought as Bikurim later this year, once it develops, or maybe not. Maybe it has to have been that the fruit is actually growing before that.
Well, it's very simple experiment. You take leaves up and you find out if the root grows.
The leaves of the tree, of course the tree has leaves. The leaves of the tree, of course the tree has leaves.
No, not the tree, the
according to Rashi, who understands that the question is as far as fruit, the question is, if you have, for example, a fig tree or a date palm or what have you, and the leaves have started growing, the leaves of the tree have started growing around the fruit or whatever, yeah. So therefore, that's the question. Is that considered enough of a growth stage that now we can say, even though the fruit itself has not started developing yet, that it will be become mutter through the shelach and through grodas bikurim, or not? Okay, so the answer is same. Okay. Next question. Boy rova barakon. Chitim shazoran bakarka. If you planted wheat in the ground, oimer matiron or ate oimer matiron, does the oimer make that wheat that's planted in the ground mutter, the seed, does it make them mutter to eat, or does it not? What do you mean? What's the question? Hey, Shidami, what is the scenario? If we're talking about that they took root, then we learn in the next Mishnah that they become mutter. And if they didn't take root yet, then we also know from the next Mishnah what the story is. This man, namely, we learn later on that in his shrishu kodim la'omer, if the grain took root means, in other words, you planted a kernel, you planted a wheat or barley or what have you kernel in the ground, and it started developing roots. As they do. So if so, Omer Matiron, then the Omer is Matirit. So later on that year, when you harvest it, right away you'll be able to eat it. It won't have any period when it's Osir. The Imlav, and if not, Asurinat, you have an Omer Aban. If not, then it's Osir until the next year's Omer. But like I was mentioning yesterday, that spring and winter wheat, for example, winter wheat, which is planted during the winter, you never have a problem with it as far as Kodesh, because by the time they harvest it, the Omer is already, the test Zionism, or your Zionism, or whatever, has already taken place. And therefore, you're good. The problem comes in with spring wheat, where they plant it very close to Pesach or after Pesach, where then it's also until Pesach or the following year.
Winter wheat always
has
the time.
Winter wheat, pretty much. Well, that's not the point. It has nothing to do. The point is that in other words, winter wheat is planted Cheshvan Kislev, November, December time or whatever. It stays in the ground over the winter. They harvest it, let's say, in April or May or whatever. So, yes, in that case, then they're there.
Whether or not the weather is clement.
That's fine. The farmer will have to know whether he planted it and it's going to grow. That's not the point. The point is that as long as he planted it and it took root before the Omer, then it's good. Once the Omer is brought, it's immediately mutter. As opposed to if it was planted after the Omer. So again, so what is Rav Baruchanan's question if he's asking if you planted this wheat in the ground, what happens as far as the Omer? The answer is loy tzricha, yes, but we need Rav Baruchanan's question for the following case. No, it means loy. Well, there's two ways of explaining it that I've heard of. One is loy, no, you're misunderstanding. Tzricha, we need it for the following case. The other one is loy tzricha, we only need it, but we don't need it except for the following. Loy tzricha, ella, right, like I said. Dechat zinu, suppose that he harvested them. Vizarinu kodim la'omer. Then he planted them before the omer. But also omer v'cholif alayhu. Now the omer came and passed. The day of Chesdain Nissen came and passed with this newly planted wheat in the ground. So in other words, so you have, let's say, grain that was not mutter by last year's omer. So let's say it was planted within 2 weeks of Pesach. 2 weeks is the amount of time for Hashlacha. So let's say, that's what we're going to learn later. But let's say, for example, you planted it a week before Pesach, let's say. So comes the omer, it's not mutter it yet because it didn't take root. So now what happens is you're supposed to wait until the following year's omer in order to eat it. Meanwhile, it grew. Okay, so it itself is kodesh, you can't eat it. But then you went and planted some of those seeds, and now the omer came. And now the omer came and passed. Become a boy away. So now the question is: those very same. We're not talking about that new grain root from them. We're talking about those very same seeds that you planted. Become a boy away. So Rav Baruchanan's question is: Maulana kuti or mecho minayu? Would you be allowed to pick those seeds out of the ground and eat them? Those very same seeds that were not mutter by last year's omer, now that they're in the ground, come this year's omer, are you allowed to eat from them? Do we say commander shadia b'kadya danya? Do we say that effectively as if they are, it's the equivalent of them being in a jar, and therefore just as if they were in a jar, they would be mutter once the omer comes? So the same thing here, even though they're in the ground, for this purpose we treat them as though they were in a jar, and therefore they would be mutter. Or maybe they're bottled to the ground, and therefore we would say that when you pick them, then they're not mutter yet. They're not mutter yet. Yeah. Before we get to that, actually, there are actually two different ways of understanding this question also. But Amnon's way of understanding it is we're not talking about the original seed. We're not talking about the seeds themselves were never mutter by the owner. So now you replanted them, and the question is whether those same seeds were mutter by this year's owner when they're in the ground. But on the other hand, if you had seeds that became mutter through the omer and then you replanted them, there'd be no question, obviously, they're mutter. Well, it's not so, of course, because I think the Raivan disagrees with that and says that, no, if you had seeds that were mutter and then you planted them, the question would still be, once you planted them, do we maybe consider that now there's the beginning of a new crop and it has to wait until the next year's omer? Okay, that's another way of explaining the question.
The first way was
that if you have these particular seeds had become mutter from one year's omer, then it wouldn't matter even if you planted them again. Of course, you could dig them up and eat them. The question would be only as the scenario that Rashi said over here, where they weren't yet mutter by the omer because last year's omer hadn't been mutter them yet because they weren't planted long enough before it. And now the question is, you planted them, would you be allowed to? You replanted those same seeds, and now they're still in the ground. Come this year's omer, is this year's omer mutter it or not? Before we get to seeing whether we have an answer to that, let's ask a couple of other questions that are also related to this case of seeds in the ground. Number one, yesh lahen ayna or ein lahen ayna? One question we can ask also is, would ayna apply to them? We learned back in Bava Metzia about many complicated sugyas over there about the dinim of ayna, where if you sell something and charge too high a price, or you buy something and pay too low a price, then it's considered ayna, and depending on how much the over or undercharge was, it may be that he's moichel, less than 1/6 he's moichel, exactly 1/6 then kono master ayna, and the kinyan is effective, but you have to return the extra or whatever amount, and if it's more than 1/6 then bitul mekach, then the person has the right to cancel the deal. Now, we also learned over there that the whole concept of ayna does not apply to land sales. So therefore, the question is, this grain that's in the ground, is it considered? What? We learned
because
no, it's not so much because everyone knows the value. The reason is because we learn it from a pasuk that the pasuk introduces the concept of ayna in connection with the expression b'chisimkru mimkar l'amisecha. If you sell something to somebody else, oikone miyad amisecha, or you buy from the hand of somebody else and find it has to be the pasuk. Yes. Okay, so now the question then is, so is this grain that's in the ground, is it considered part of the ground or not? If it is, then there's no ayna. And if it's considered a talpulin, then ayna would apply to it just like anything else. So the question is, first of all, what's the scenario? Hey, if you dummy, elaim de amalei shadoi bashita. Are we talking about a case where one person said, let's say for example, you hired a sharecropper, let's say to plant your field, and he says I planted 6 measures of wheat in it. And then you have witnesses who come and say that he only planted 5, where you're going to argue that's a difference of 1/6. Well, of course, then that's not relevant to ayna anyway, because of Ha'amar Rabba. Rabba says over there, in that connection, in Bava Metzia. No. Well, but the point is, Rabba says something else. Whole dabar shavu midah v'shavu mishka v'shavu minyan, anything that involves a measurement or weight, or a number, then you can retract it even if the difference is less than today ayna. In other words, what is ayna? Ayna is when you have, there's a general price that most people charge for it, but you have some people will charge a little bit more, some people will charge a little bit less. It's not an objective, it sort of is an objective thing. There's an objective 1/6 or whatever because you can compare with the standard price, but on the other hand, to a certain extent, there's a judgment call in it, how much to charge for it. It's not exactly precise. As opposed to, for example, if I sell you a carton of a dozen eggs, and you bring it home and you find there's only 11 in them, it's less than 1/6. But still, that's nechach tov. That's a mistaken sale. That's an objective thing. There was supposed to be 12 and there's only 11. So therefore, in this case over here, it's an objective thing. He says six, and then it turns out that there were five, so then it's not a question of enough. Then even if the difference was less than that, even if he claimed I planted 10 and Adam comes and says he planted 9, it would also be retractable. It's not a question of enough. So what is that's a good way of thinking of it. So what is the scenario over here? Now, Ella, no. The case is like this. Suppose we're talking about that the sharecropper, let's say, says, I planted the amount that is supposed to be planted in this field. And then Adam come and say that he planted less, which is he didn't plant the amount that's supposed to be planted in this field. So in other words, so here we're talking about, it is more of a continuous function. In fact, Tosfos learns, it's not even the Adam are not even necessarily contradicting him on the amount that he planted. Tosfos learns whether it was enough or not. In other words, the idea is there's a certain amount that's supposed to be planted in a field, and therefore, so he claims that I planted the proper amount, and Adam come and say that, no, you didn't plant the proper amount that's appropriate for this size field. So it's not a discrete thing, 5 versus 6, or like a dozen eggs versus 11 or whatever, where we could say it's a question of bitul mecha. It's right. So they're not even arguing about the exact amount. They say, we agree, you did plant 6 sa. However, this particular field needs more than 6 sa.
Portion or not. What are you getting is the notion of proportion?
Because again, then you have the usual thing of 1/6. So not less than 1/6, we assume people are merchel. 1/6, we assume people are not merchel. So, for example, something that's supposed to sell for $5 and you charge $6 for it.
Yeah.
Same idea, though. If we say that we're talking about over here that this grain is considered to be, if we take the view that this grain is considered to be metalkalin, then anah would apply to it. And what would that mean? Since anah applies to it, would mean that we would say, he's claiming, for example, that I planted 6. So he's claiming, let's say, I planted 6. Like Tosfos is saying, A didn't come and say, fine, you did plant 6, but you should realize this field really needs, let's say, 7.2 or whatever, so it's a difference of 1/6. So therefore, or 5 versus 6, whatever, to keep it more simple, so then it's a question of enough. If we say that the wheat that he planted is considered metalkalin, if we say that it's considered karka, then no, because then no, it doesn't apply to karka. Yeah, but... Well, planting applies to karka, sure, but in this case, where you have grain planted in the ground, is it considered now because it's in the ground? Is it considered like the ground or not? Well, that's the question. If it's metalkalin, you would consider it a na or not? Okay, you have a couple of other explanations also. You have the Ramban learns that we're talking about a case where, let's say, a person planted a field and then he's selling somebody else the crop that was already planted. And they're arguing about how much he sold them. Not how much he sold them, but again, the value of how much he sold them. And they're arguing about the value of it to the difference of 1/6. If you say it's metalkalin, then it's like any other metalkalin. Okay, so that's the Ramban's way of understanding it. So we're not talking about how much, we're not talking about did you plant the right amount. Right, they're arguing about the value of it. And then the Ramban has yet another explanation of it that we're talking about. You hired a worker to plant the field, and it turns out that he didn't plant the right amount. And the Lecha Mishnah explains over there, we have to be talking about that the worker is the one who supplied the seed. We're therefore, effectively, then it's another kind of case involving a sale of seed. So therefore, it's
the output I understand. The input, I mean, see whether it's related to or not.
Because, again, they're going to be arguing about how much did he plant or what do you mean, what difference does it make? Is there a nah or not? Did you plant the right amount or did you plant less? So therefore, again, we can be talking about you hired a worker to do this, let's say, according to the Rambam, and let's say that, as the Lecha Mishnah says, the worker supplied the seed. So now, effectively, the argument is, you're selling me seed to the value of X amount, and in the end, now I have Adam that say that it is a different amount. So I know.
If you have the same amount of output, what difference does it make?
First of all, you don't necessarily have this. Obviously, if you have less input, you have less output. No, but you're not, what do you mean you're assuming? You're not going to. If you have less input, you have less output.
One thing. You're saying if there's less input, necessarily there's an output. If you have the same output with less input or with more...
How are you going to? You only have a certain number of wheat kernels grow from one kernel. Okay. The point is that you can have a case where the employer and the employee are arguing according to the nam-nam about how much you planted. Did you plant the right amount or did you not plant the right amount? So similar to Tosfos, that you planted X amount, but is that appropriate for a field this size or is it not? Okay, whatever it is. So the question would be again, is there a no or not? So that's the thing. Yes, the question boils down to, is this wheat that's lying in the ground is considered a health one or not? And a third question is, so again, the question is, do we consider this wheat as being the equivalent of as if it was in a jar? Because even though it's in the ground, we would say it's still in the palestin. The yesh line and the no applies to that academy in the jar. A gyumah bottle or the gabe aro. Maybe they're bottled to the ground, and therefore no, it doesn't apply. Just like in general, it doesn't apply to ground. Because it's not possible. And a third question.
Okay.
A third question we can ask, nishiborin alein, or nishiborin alein. Suppose that there's a claim and a counterclaim involving this grain, and there's a question that where the person might have to swear because of motive nefesh, for example, because there's one aid against him. Again, as we learned in Bav Nasiya, there's no shvua and in shvuas, we have to learn, there's no shvua on claims involving karka. So again, the question is this considered impalpable or not? Again, do we say kiddushadia b'kada damya, do we say that this grain is considered the equivalent of being in a jar, and then it's like metalin, and then in that case, a shvur would apply to it in the case of motive mixer, same as any other metalin.
We had a similar discussion, and I think we
I don't think we had any.
Paris is not considered karka.
That was when you had paris that grew that year. In other words, here we're talking about the actual grain that you originally planted, which at one time was metalin, and now is lying there in the ground, developing into new plants. There you're thinking of paris that grew this year, where they didn't exist before this year. Okay, so Vinish Boina. That's the question. Are they bottled or not when you planted them? Vinish Boina Lehem, so therefore you should have to swear on them. If they're not bottled, Ojuma bottle or Agava Aro, or maybe they're bottled to the ground, the Chimakayaki Yamu, and then they're considered like Kaka, they're Inish Boina Lehem, and therefore you don't swear on any claims involving them.
The root, the seeds that you plant, necessarily they dissolve. And they become part of it.
Eventually they do, but before they do, suppose that right after he planted, they get into an argument about how much he planted or about whether it was the appropriate amount or whatever.
So we're talking about the timing of the plant.
Yeah, that's it.
Not the general cycle.
Right. Yeah. And again, the answer is take, well, we don't know. So with all these cases, so in the original case that we asked about regarding the Omer, the answer is it would be a suffix whether the Omer is master them or not. So the Rambam Paskins, you're not allowed to pick them out of the ground and eat them. But if you did, you're not Chayav Malchus, because you can't be Chayav Malchus on a Suffolk. And for the other two questions, we would say that's a Suffolk, whether it's a Suffolk, whether a no would apply and whether a Shavuot would apply. So you can't make them swear because of the Suffolk. And then you can't apply the dinim of a no because of the Suffolk.
I was going to say, if they grew, they were necessarily buckled to the ground.
No, of course not. Because as long as eventually they grow, then at that point they dissolve in the ground. But up until that point, so you can argue that.
That's what I'm saying. So if they didn't grow, they were not bottled, but once they grew, they were bottled.
Okay. Obviously, at some later point, they will become bottled. By the same logic, you could say that you're not going to swear a shavua involving food because eventually food gets digested. Until it gets digested, it's still without one.
Same.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Another question. Boy, Rami Bakhar, speaking of food getting digested. If you find wheat in the waste, in the dung of cattle, with sa'odin shabagelalai behema, or you find barley in the waste of an animal, Rashi points out the reason why we're mentioning bakar specifically in connection with wheat is because cattle usually eat wheat. Other kinds of animals, like donkeys and whatever, usually eat barley.
When you shed them, so you find them.
Sometimes you do, yeah. And in fact, sometimes on Pesach in particular, it can be a shayla, yeah. Usually you find that more with chickens, I think. But I suppose you can find it with larger animals as well. Okay, so again, so if you find in the dung of the animal, you find wheat or barley, mahu, what would be the din of those kernels of grain? As far as what halacha are we asking, what would be the din of those kernels? If you find them, sometimes you have, they pass through undigested. In fact, yeah, by the way, you have a Gemara and Ksubas that said, you have a Gemara and Ksubas that tells how Makdumin, after the Churban, Rabbi Yechon and Zaka found Makdumin Ben-Gurion's daughter was reduced to that. She was having to pick through the dung of animals and collect kernels of grain. And Rabbi Yechon and Zaka asked what happened. Your father and your father-in-law were among the richest people in Yerushalayim. to make a long story short, the answer is, the Gemara says, that they didn't give tzedakah as much as they were supposed to, and therefore all their wealth ended up getting destroyed. Anyway.
Didn't give enough to
a tenth? No, I don't know, maybe they gave one tenth, but whatever. The expression of the Gemara is, from gam l'shichna, according to the size of the camel, is the load that's expected to bear, they being such rich people were expected to give more than the minimum amount. So if they didn't, then it was held against them. Anyway, so the point is, so getting back to here, so the question is, regarding what halakha are you asking what would be the din of these kernels of grain? Are you asking whether these kernels of grain would be considered food as far as the din of Tumah V'Tahara? Well, Rami Bar Chama doesn't need to ask the question. Tanena, we learn in a braisa the answer. Chitin Shebereki Bakar, if you find wheat kernels in the dung of cattle, with the Urid Shebegele Behema, or you find barley in the dung of other animals, then it depends. Chishav Aleihem Lachila. So it depends. Chishav Aleihem Lachila. If you only thought about them, that you plan to eat them, Ein Metame Tumas Osen, and that's not enough to make them Tome, that they're able to become Tome with Tumas Osen yet. Meaning exactly what it sounds like. In other words, if while they're still in the dung, you think about them, like you're in the situation, Chas V'Shalom, of Nachdimin Ben Gurion's daughter, for example, and you think to yourself, you know what, I will pick those out and I'll wash them off and I'll eat them, that's not enough to make them Mekabel Tumah.
If you wash them.
If you only thought about it, Likta Machila, but if you actually pick them out of the dung, then Mekabel Tumah Tosin. Then they could become Tomei like any other food. So Rami Bar Chama should have the answer. What's the question?
Didn't you say that the tumah, was it tumah? It depends on mashallah?
Sometimes, but sometimes tumah depends on mashallah. But in this case, since it was in the rigi, since it was in the dung, then mashallah is not enough. You need a maisa in order to make them. Yeah. Okay, so that should be the answer. So the question is, elul menachos, is Rami Bar Chama asking the question whether you could use this grain for a korban mincha? Shit of the law, obviously not. As the Pasuk says, offer such a thing, the Navi Malachi says to the Jewish people, would you even offer such a thing to your governor? Would he even accept your face? But obviously, it's a bazillion to bring such a thing as Menachos. What's the question? The answer is, Lois Tzricha, yes, but the case that Rami Bar Chama has to ask this question about is as follows. It is as far as Menachos, but a little bit different. Zinaktinu, suppose he collected them out of the dung. Vizarinu, then he replanted them. The Kaboy l'isturi Menachos minayim. Now what happens is, he wants to bring Menachos from what grew from these kernels. So not the kernels themselves. Now you have, there are some of the Mephoshim who understand the question is as far as the kernels themselves, and therefore it's similar to the previous question, whether maybe once they're planted, then the mere sight of having been in dung goes away from them. But according to Rashi, we're talking about what grows from them. So the question is, so what grows from them? My, mishum de mi'isutahu, do we say the problem is that they're disgusting because they were in the dung of the animal? And therefore, the kibin desar inu azolami yusasayu. So you could argue that once they were planted and new grain grew from it, then maybe the miyastikait has gone away. Then therefore, maybe it's acceptable from nafas. Or maybe the problem is not the fact that it's disgusting, but the fact that since the original kernels passed through the digestive system of an animal, that weakened them in the sense that now, even what grows from them is not going to be such high-quality grain as it would have if it hadn't gone through that. The hashtanami kusha, well, in that case, and the growth, they are the same kind of thing. They're also lower quality, because after all, that's how it is. It's the original, So that's the question. And again, the answer, and again, the answer is teku, that we don't know, so again, you shouldn't do it l'chatchila. Teku means we're not sure, so therefore we're machmir, but if we're machmir on it, right? So right, because of the suffix. Oh, in the previous case, by the way, it points out in Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah, in the previous cases, as far as Aina and as far as Yishuah, where it points out in Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah, what they would actually do is, because of the suffix, we can't make them swear a Shavuah Deraita, however we can make them swear a Shavuah Pesach Derabanan. You would never swear Shavuot Deraita on a Sabbath, exactly. So over here, by the way, also, the Rambam has a slightly different way of understanding the question over here, because the Rambam actually doesn't mention anything about the Rambam doesn't mention anything about the question of of kosha, of it being weakened by having gone through the digestive system, that Amram just says, the question is, did the mirtzeis, did the disgustingness of it go away by being planted or not? The question is, how does that fit with the way we have it in our Gemara? So one possibility is that Amram may have had a different view. Yeah? Well, but the way that Amram formulates the question is that when you have this grain that went through the digestive tract of an animal and then you planted it, the question is a suffix, he says, whether the meus of it, whether the disgustingness of it went away by being planted or not. The expression is chitim shalasta megillei abraka bezaram, and he planted them. Hadei l'safik im over miusim bezriya. Did the miuskite go away by the being planted? Are yadayin hein miusim, or are they still disgusting? L'pichach l'yavi mehem menachas. So you shouldn't bring menachas. And then hevi kosher. But if he did, he have it as kosher? So the question is, didn't the Gemara seem to say over here, the problem is not only the question of it being miusim, the question is also of it being weakened just in quality by having gone through the digestive system. Why isn't the Rama mentioning that? So the Mesa Caleb over there talk about, the Lacha Mishnah talks about, that the Rambam may have understood that the Rambam may be summarizing. When he says, Ogra Mi'isusan, he may be including in that term both possibilities that the Gemara has mentioned. Either that it's still considered disgusting because it went through the digestive system of an animal and came out with a waste, or the very fact that we're saying over here in the Gemara, this that could be lower in quality because of that, could also be considered an aspect of being disgusting. And therefore, that I'm summarizing those under one heading over there, and therefore saying ultimately again, since the Gemara says kafu, then it means you shouldn't bring from them, but if you did, but you have it as kosher.
Two ways of being disgusting,
in other words, basically, right. Okay. Fine. Boy, Rami Bachama. Now Rami Bachama asks, so that's the Chachila, but the Yavad is acceptable, because as usual, that's how it is with status involving Karbonis. Usually we say it's not Chachila, you shouldn't be doing it, but if you did it, then the Yavad is acceptable. Next case. Fourth question that Rami Bachama asks. The fourth question that Rami Bachama. Now this one, unlike the previous three, had to do with the Omer and the Shkelecha. This one doesn't really directly have to do with that, but it's a similar question about something digested by an animal and then excreted. So, Bor Rami Bachama, Pil Shabolak Fitamitris. If an elephant swallowed a basket made out of palm leaves. Mithras Rashi doesn't necessarily mean Egyptian. It means mitsure dekel. It means that it's made, not in palm leaves necessarily, but whatever. Palm fibers, whatever. The point is, it's a large animal. It can conceivably swallow such a basket. Yes. They kia derach beitari, and then he squeezed it out the other end. Mahu. So what would be the din of this basket? No. Wait. So the question is Lamai. Okay, but what? Well, no, this is not a question of food, obviously, but the question is Lamai. As far as what are we asking the question? Are we talking about that if it was tomei beforehand, and the question is, having gone through the digestive system of the elephant, is it now tar? Well, we don't need Rami Bachama to be asking the question. Tameina. We learn in a Mishnah, kolak, which you said before about machshava, kolak kelim yodin l'day tumasa machshava, any keli is able to be makabel tuma based on machshava, as long as you have if you have something which is... No, because there was food. He was talking about cake, two different things.
Right.
Food, you need more than machshava. You need a mitzvah.
Food, you always need a mitzvah.
At least in that particular case. But yeah, in general, I mean, first of all, you need it to have been mukhshu of a kabbal tumma. But yeah, food has different dinim than cake, anyway.
Okay.
But here we're talking about as far as cake. So here, for example, we have an example that Rashi gives the example of it here, which we learned something similar to it in Zvachim, that if you have, for example, a piece of leather, if you mean to make shoes out of it, then it's only the kabbal tumma when you make shoes out of it, but if you decide instead to make it, to use it for a tablecloth, now it doesn't need anything else on it, then it's the kabbal tumma right then, even though you didn't do anything with it. So, yodin l'dihit tumasa machshava, v'ein olim b'tumasa n'elam eshirim maisa, but to leave the tumma, if they became tumma, there you need something to actually be done to them. For example, to break them. So over here, it went through, it came out intact. Of course it's still macabre. Of course it's still tummy with the same tumma that it had. This is a kli cheref is different. But here we're talking about, something made out of palm fiber, so it's similar to wood. So, yeah. Okay.
I thought that wood never was macabre.
No, wood can be macabre tumma if it has a kli kibble, if it has a receptacle. Yeah, it's a receptacle. Okay.
And the same thing with concrete, or?
With the what?
With materials made from
almonds. Yeah, it comes from a tree. That's the same thing in the wood. Okay. So, Loitzricha, yes, the case where Rami Bachomer is asking this question, suppose that, let's say we're not talking about the elephant swallowed a whole basket. Let's say it swallowed palm fibers, and they came out intact at the other end, and then you took those fibers and made them into a basket. So now, me have equal. The question is, do we consider that once these fibers have gone through the digestive tract of the elephant, it's now considered they've been digested. Now, in this case, practically speaking, they haven't. They came out intact. But nevertheless, maybe we shouldn't consider them fibers anymore. The Havalei, to clay glolin, to clay abdama, maybe now we should consider this basket that you made out of these fibers, we should consider it to have the din of a keli made out of dung, or clay abdama, or a keli made out of unfired clay, where v'ein makabel and tumah, where such things are not makabel tumah. The Amamar, in fact, we learn in the Mishnah, clay avonim or clay glolim or clay adama, kalim made out of stone, or kalim made out of dung, or kalim of animals, or kalim of unfired earth, ain't makabel tumah or not makabel tumah, loy medivet tov or loy medivet sekum. They're not makabel tumah on a deraisa level or a jerabonim level. Which, by the way, for that reason, we find in many places in Shach that when they needed kalim that are going to be impervious to tumah, then they would often use, for that reason, they would use stone kalim or clay glolim or whatever. They've also found archaeologically, they found that when you visit the old city, there's a place you can visit called the Burnt House, which is the ruins of a house that was destroyed shortly after the Churban, and most of the kalim in this house that they recovered were made out of stone. And they figured out on the basis of inscriptions or whatever that this is a house of Kohanim. Because Kohanim have to be careful with Tumah V'Tahara, they had most of the utensils in their house made out of stone, so they wouldn't be Makabel Tumah. So they have many of them on display, but they're not Makabel Tumah, exactly. So,
even stuff with stone?
Yes.
Is not Makabel Tumah?
Yes. Because stone is stone, yeah. The only things that are Makabel Tumah are metal, wood if it has a tea table, earthenware, clothing and sackcloth and whatever, leather, and the drabon on glass. Leather that's been worked. And the drabon on glass. That's pretty much it. So one
diamond.
Way... What? Diamond? I don't know. Good question. Diamond might well be considered
diamond,
like stone.
Stone.
Yeah, it might well be considered like stone. I don't know. I mean, the truth is, when we say we have clay glolim, actually, over here, Tosis points out, it's clear from the context over here that clay glolim means kalim made out of dung, out of dried dung or whatever. But there are other places actually where Rashi explains clay glolin means kalim made out of marble. Golol can also be like heavy stones that have to be rolled around.
Not shesh.
Shesh is there's the tanakh for it. Golol is Aramaic.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one possibility. Oydim loy have ikol, or maybe not. Since it came out intact, since these fibers came out intact at the other end, maybe it's not considered they were digested, and therefore any kali that you make from them can be a makabel tumah, like any other. Now, so by the way, before we continue with the discussion, the Tosfos actually brings up the point that you mentioned, that we just talked about the case where grain went through the digestive system of the animal, and we're talking about that they still have the dinim, that they still have that they're not metamet tumas oiklin unless you do a mice with them, but they are not. Here we're talking of course it'd be metabol tumah. Why wouldn't it? It should be the same thing. So Tosfos has a long discussion. Tosfos has a long discussion about the pros and cons of it, but one possibility, Tosfos says, is there's a difference between swallowing a whole thing, for example, a whole piece of food or a whole keli or whatever, versus swallowing fibers and then coming out the other end, where maybe therefore we could say that those don't have such a chashimus and therefore they're bottles. Or maybe not.
A whole keli would be one thing.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. That's the question. The answer is tifshit. So the Gemara answer is tifshit le'meha. Shouldn't we be able to answer it on the basis of this that we learned? The Oma Ola Mishum Reb Shimon Bar Yehi Tzadok. It's in a Gemara in Tainis. Ma'ase ubalu ze'evim shnei tinokos ze'evra yarden. It happened once in Evra Yarden that wolves swallowed up two little children. The Mishnah actually mentions that the Chachamim at that time were going to retire because of this, in general, we know, besides that you make a tightness for any soda that comes on the sieve, this is one of those kinds of things. And you have wolves that are so desperate or whatever, mishlachas ze'evim, the Gemara calls it over there, where wolves, mishlachas means that usually wolves and most wild animals are afraid to attack human beings, especially. But the point is, you can have times when the wolves are particularly, when they're particularly hungry, when they're having a population explosion, or who knows, whatever it is, and then they become unusually aggressive. So that's the kind of tzara that you would make a kindness for, to ask Hashem for that. So in this case, wolves actually ate up two children in Eder HaYarden. Later on, they excreted out the remains. So they brought the case to the Chachamim to ask what is the din of those remains. Are they metame or not? The tear of the boxer, and they declared the flesh of the children that it's not metame anymore because it went through the digestive system of the wolves, and now it's considered like part of their weight. So therefore, that should answer over here. The same thing with these palm fibers. They shouldn't be macabre children. If you make a candy out of them, they shouldn't be macabre children. That's not the point. The point is, obviously, some of the meat came out undigested. Some of the flesh came out undigested. It was still recognizable, and the Chachamim declared it tahor. Because once it went through the digestive system, then it's not macabre, so then it's not macabre anymore. So the same thing over here. These palm fibers shouldn't be macabre children anymore. Okay, Mark says, well, I, shiny bolsters are doctors. Okay, but you could argue that flesh is different because it's so soft. Yeah, basically it got digested at least to a certain extent. You can't argue that it's in its original state anymore. Okay, so the question is volitionally safer. On the other hand, maybe we should be able to answer based on the next part of that braisa in Tainis, which continues with Timu Esasam, right? That the Chachamim declared the bones of these children to still be Mitame. So therefore that should answer the question. Well,
because they were not modified.
Well, that's it. So the answer is shiny as well. The difference is bones are very hard. They don't get really affected by digestion at all. Therefore, you can argue they're still in the original state. So the question is, obviously, we're talking about the big bones. So the question is over here. So in other words, we have three levels. In other words, we have really soft things like flesh. Once they go through and come out the other end, there's no question they're not metabolic anymore. On the other hand, bones will still be metame. We still have the question over here regarding these fibers, which are somewhere in between. They're not as soft as flesh. On the other hand, they're not as hard as palm fibers. We're talking about whatever. That's the point. They won't be. Well, they could be affected to a certain extent, but not as much as flesh, but not as little as bone. So now the question is: are they considered part of the dung of the animal, and therefore anything made out of them is clay glolim, and it's not macabre chitma, or maybe not? And again, the answer is, well, here the Gemara doesn't explicitly say teku, but yes, the question is still left unresolved. They're not modified very much, but they're modified more. They're modified more than more less than flesh, but more than bone. Incidentally, by the way, you have
they're making salad made of what's it called, artist palm
tree. Okay, so
these are digestive.
Okay.
But the real fibers themselves are not.
Okay. I mean, but whatever fibers it is, whatever kind of things it is that you make the baskets out of, apparently they can pass through undigested or more or less undigested. So the question is, what's the data then?
Well,
yeah. By the way, you actually have an interesting thing. The Gemara tells in Bava Basra, so we learned it a couple of years back, about the Gemara tells a story over there involving this din of an elephant swallowing a basket. Namely, you had a story over there where a Bimi Min Hadar one time comes to town, and the usual rule is that if a Talmid Chacham comes to town selling something, you allow him to sell his merchandise first before any of the other local merchants so that he can finish his business and get back to his loot. So in this case, your Bimi Min Hadar came with his stuff to sell, dried figs or whatever it was, and the Reish Galusa tells Rava to go check him out if he's really a Talmid Chacham and deserves that courtesy. So Rava sends Rav Adi Bar Abba to do it instead. And Rav Adi Bar Abba asks him this question about the elephant in the basket. And Rav Bimi Min Hadar didn't know the answer. The choice was points out over there. So in the end, they said, in that case, he's not much of a Talmud Chacham, so they didn't give him this courtesy, and things developed from there. Anyway, there's a whole sad story that developed from there where Rav Adi Bar Abba ended up Rav Bimi Min Hadar held it against him, and Rav Adi Bar Abba ended up passing away, and each of the Chachamim were blaming themselves for what happened. Anyway, the point is,
he was
a Talmud Chacham after all. The Tosafot asks over there, or Gemara itself didn't give an answer to the question. So what did so what's Rav Abba Bar Abba expecting from him doing the Hagah? And the answer is, so it says, fine, he may not have had an absolute final answer, but at least he could have brought the sources that we're bringing over here in our Gemara, and at least said, you know, we have this source that seems to imply this, we have this source that seems to imply that, and at least that would tell us that he knows his, that he knows his stuff, that he knows what he's dealing with. Okay. All right. That's supposed to point out over there, yeah. Okay. Boy Rav Zeira. Now Rav Zeira asks another question. What is the din if wheat falls from the cloud? Now, how does wheat fall from the cloud? The Gemara is going to say that. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is going to say to you in an actual case where such a thing happened. Hold on. So the Gemara is going to mention in a couple of lines a case where such a thing actually happened, but what's the scenario over here? Rashi says you can have, let's say, that you have a water spout over the ocean or over the Mediterranean or what have you. There was a ship there carrying wheat, and a water spout sucked some of it up and then brought it up to the clouds and eventually dropped it, and eventually, yeah, whatever, a water spout, a hurricane or whatever, eventually dropped it over someplace else. They have, and in different books you can find descriptions of things happening. Yeah, with wheat, well, I've heard of it happening with frogs and fish and all kinds of other things. Yeah, okay. So that's the rationale. Tosfos says, given that the Gemara is going to be asking, let's learn the Gemara first, and then we'll talk about what Tosfos says. Okay, so Boyer of Dega. Chitin Shiyodu V'Ovim Mahu. What happens if wheat came down with the clouds? So you ask Lamai, as far as what halacha, you're asking the question. Elam and Nochos, if you're talking about can you use such wheat for a Kovim Mika, am I worried? Well, why not? We're going to learn later on in Amos Sefer that wheat from the Nochos can come from anywhere in the world. Doesn't that got to be from Eretz Yisrael? For sure. Yes. For most menachos, but the question rather would be, can we use this wheat for the shtei alechem? Which has to be from Eretz Yisrael. So that's the question. So what's the deal? On the one hand, the Torah says that the shtei alechem has to be from your dwelling places, meaning Eretz Yisrael. La puki de chutzla aretz eloy. Now maybe that only means as opposed to chutzla aretz. Avod avim shaper zami. Maybe if it comes from the clouds, okay, because not from chutzla aretz, from the clouds. Maybe it means specifically from your dwelling places, from Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, even the clouds are no good. The Droga Trevor has a short thing. Well, obviously, passing over Eretz Yisrael, yeah. The Droga Trevor has a short thing about this in one of his Trugas, where he points out, in other words, what it is the question, the Gemara's question basically is it that you need to have the advantage of Eretz Yisrael, or is it that you can't have the disadvantage of chutzla aretz? If you say you have to have the advantage of Eretz Yisrael, the clouds don't have the advantage of Eretz Yisrael. But if you say you can't have the disadvantage of chutzla aretz, then fine, the clouds don't have the disadvantage of chutzla aretz. They have neither, exactly. So that's the question. So now that's, okay, so again, so Rashi learns that we're talking about that a water spout picked up from a ship that was sailing on the ocean, picked up some wheat, and then dropped it over Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos says, how would that work? The whole question is, the Gemara is saying if it came from Chutzlar, it's no good. This ship probably came from Chutzlar. So then how would it work? So Tosfos says, that we're talking about it must have been that a net happened, that it fell down unexpectedly. Okay. So the question is a mi'ikas ha'ayavna. Well, in other words, the point is it would be from a net that came min ha'shamayim. It didn't come from any place. This wheat didn't come from any place on earth. The same way as Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, where we had a case over there where I think it was Kriya Ba'aba, had two pieces of meat fall down for him in Hashemayim, and they told him, Ein Dabar Tomei Yorid Min Hashemayim, and you're allowed to eat it. The same thing over here. You'd have wheat that Hashem sent down in Hashemayim. So there was a net. Okay. So the question is, Gavna, do you have such a thing actually happen in real life? The answer is Ein. Yes, you have an example. Kid Adi Tayah, as you have the example of Adi, the Arab merchant, or on the side of here, we're going to Bar Adi, that is his name, Nechisalei Rum Kizbachiti, he had fall on his land wheat that was piled up to the height of a kizba, which Rashi says kizba means a tefach, or different geosolids over here, one tefach or two talking with the thumb stuck up. In other words, a regular tefach is like this, and here it was like this, or like this maybe, yeah. So that high,
what
did you think was the size of the forest? I don't know. The cloth of parsley in a length of 3 parsahs. Now, 3 parsahs, about 8 miles. So you're talking about a considerable amount of wheat. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, such things happen in real life. So therefore, we can be asking the question. It's a good question. We don't know for sure. Although we don't know for sure. Although they bring in this connection that the Aruch Girsa of Gemara and Megillah mentions that there's the Gemara and Megillah over there that says that Mordechai was that Mordechai crowned himself with his mitzvah. So he did his mitzvah very publicly so that everybody would see it and would make a Kiddush Hashem. And the Aruch Girsa is like Adi. So that may be the same Adi of our Gemara. Maybe he was exceptionally careful in doing this publicly and therefore should reward him in this way. We don't know, though. We don't know for sure. Whatever it is. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So again, according to Rashi, the situation is that it was sucked up from a ship or whatever. According to Tosfos, the situation is that it fell b'derech nes. There is a good deal of discussion among the Achronim about the question, according to Tosfos, if we're saying that it came b'derech nes, would you be allowed to use it for the Sheol Lechem anyway? You're not, on the face of it, you have to use wheat that was grown in a normal way, but derech hateva, not the same derech nes. Yeah, not the same derech nes. So they have different discussions about the propriety of that. Fine, but we're talking about a net, the derech hateva, malugash hateva versus not. Okay. The Rebbe talks about, there's an interesting sikha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea of the deeper meaning of this in Avodah Hashem. So like we discussed yesterday, the idea of the Sheol Lechem is that it's meant to be that the person uses their own koichos and has bittul towards Hashem. That's the connection of the Sheol Lechem, which are made out of chametz, with the kvasim. So usually what it's supposed to be is the person has worked on themselves during the 49 days of Sfira, and therefore now they're ready to offer their own personal Sheol Lechem to Hashem. And normally you have to have, for that purpose, you have to have wheat that comes from Moshe Seichem, that comes from your dwelling places down here on earth, the Siddurah Siddurah Fafra. Here the question is, all of a sudden you have wheat that came to you from the Siddurah Siddurah Era, representing, in other words, that a person all of a sudden has a thought of Tshuva that came to him, Milamayla, without his own effort. So the question is, does it count or not? So since the Gemara leaves the question unresolved, the answer is you shouldn't be doing a Machshila. Don't be depending on Hisoris Milamayla. Do your own work. However, if a Hisoris Tshuva comes in the Milah, don't waste the opportunity, grab the opportunity and do it anyway. And don't rely on Nissim, but if it comes, then use it. By the way, I mean, you have returning to the matter of Nissim, actually, you have a couple of the Achronim also point out, you have a concept also in the Gemara and Tainus that says you're not really supposed to use things that came through a nest. You have a story over there involving, I think, a Kamin of Mendoza and wheat that was then multiplied miraculously through a nest, and it was a Shvachosa, maybe it was, I don't remember anyway. And he said, I'm not going to have any Hanah from this because it came dead of nest. So how does that fit over here with the possibility of using it from an office? So one answer, of course, is the famous answer, mitzvahs lav lahanis. Mitzvahs are not a matter of hanah, so therefore you can go ahead and use them. It's not a matter of having hanah from a net. But another, no, that's the question. If you're using it for the Sheol Lechem, that's a mitzvah. But another answer is that's only mitzvah siddur. You're allowed to use something that comes out of net. It's just mitzvah siddur, not just. Okay. Fine.
But
different Achronim talk about it. Okay. Boy of Shimon ben Pazi. Okay, now Rav Shimon ben Pazi says, here's another question. Suppose you have a stalk of grain that grew to one third of its growth before the Omer. For Akra. Then he... Now we have a new question involving the Omer. So here you have a stalk of grain that grew to one third of its growth before the Omer. Now Rashi explains, the point is, if it had grown to less than that, the Omer would not be Masir. You have to have... What Rashi says is, if it's still growing at the time the Omer, at the time the Omer is brought, then fine, we said once it took root, then it's good enough. But here we're talking about, if it grew to less than one third and then you picked it, then the Omer is not Masir, because then it's not grain yet. That's how Rashi learns.
Before we said
that if it's still growing, then as long as it took root at the time of the Omer, then it's good. But here, that's because it continues growing afterwards. If it grew less than a third, and then you picked it, Rashi learns the Omer wouldn't be master. But if it grew at least one third, fine, the Omer is master. But then he uprooted it before the Omer was brought. The Shoslal Achar Omer, then he replanted it after the Omer was brought, and it continued growing. The Shoslal Achar Omer, and now it continued growing and it became bigger. So now the question is, Mahu, what's the din? Is it mutter to eat? Well, so if you're as linen, do we say we go according, we go after the original thing that grew, the part that grew beforehand, the shaya omer, therefore the omer was mahu, and the fact that you replanted it now doesn't after it again, even though more of it grew after the omer, or jom about the toisa, says linen, or maybe we go according to what grew afterwards, and therefore you have to wait till next year's omer for it to be allowed to eat it. No, so the Gemara says, Kif shit lay meha. So the Gemara asks, shouldn't we be able to answer it on the basis of this? The Omer Abba Bo, Omer Abba Yechanan, Yalda Shetibcha Bizkena, when it comes to the dinim of Orla, if you took a branch, from a tree or a grapevine or whatever, that was Orla, which had, Shetibcha means that he grafted it.
Yeah.
So like this, you have a branch, so one second, you have a branch from a young tree that's less than 3 years old, which has food on it, then he grafted it onto an old tree where already the years of Orla have passed, Oval Paris, and the branch that he grafted on has food on it, Afilo Hoisif Masayim, then what happens is, even if the fruit now grew, even if now the fruit grew 200 times larger, Oster, then it becomes Oster. Now, normally, Orla is bottled in 200. But over here, we say, since the original fruit, the original tiny fruit that was on there when you grafted it was already Orla, then the fact that now it grew 200 times as much is not the bottle, the original Orla. Even though normally Orla is bottled in 200. So we see that you go according to the Iker. You don't go according to the choice. But Omer of Shmuel ben Nachmani, Omer of Yechezkel. Furthermore, we find that Shmuel ben Nachmani said in the name of Rav Yechezkel, a similar din, if you plant an onion in a vineyard, which you're not allowed to plant vegetables in a vineyard, so that makes kalayim, the neker akerem, and afterwards the vineyard was uprooted, so now on the face of it, whatever's growing after that is not kalayim anymore. So in other words, again, you have a small onion, and then it's growing larger, where the rest of it grew after the vineyard is removed, after the host is masayim also. Again, even if onion grew 200 times as large, it's not about the original thing. So therefore, because the Iser was also. So we would have the same answer over here, therefore. The answer would be that the original was Musser, and therefore the extra that it grew after the Oymer was brought can't answer it. So what's the question? The question is, he grew from a biolite. Okay, Rav Shimon ben Pazi knows of the statement of Rav Abba Omer Rav Yechanan, but his question is it nifshitulu l'rabbanan debasa ishtar as linen? Is it that Rabbi Yechanan knows for a fact that we definitely go according to the original thing, we don't go according to what was added later? Therefore, loishna l'kula v'loishna l'kula. Therefore, the same din would be whether it comes out from a kula, like in our case, the wheat before and after the omer, or whether it comes from a chumra, as in the cases of Orla and Kalayah. Or maybe what it is Rabbi Yechanan has a suffix about it. And therefore, l'chumra aminin, l'kula lay aminin. So therefore, we would have to go l'chumra in the cases of Orla and in the cases of Kalaya Kerem, we're going according to the Iser results in a chumra. But we wouldn't say it l'kula in our case of the grain. We would say maybe we would have to say that we do go according to the extra part that grew after the omer was brought. And we wouldn't be maple. And again, the answer is take or we don't know. So therefore, you're not supposed to eat it, but if a person does eat it, he's not chayv malchus to eat in chodesh. Again, because he can't give malchus for a chodesh. That's it.